Hello, everybody. Welcome back. This week is Parashas Pikudei. Next week is going to be Tainus Esther, so there won't be a shir next week, and then it's going to be Purim. So this week we're going to learn Hilchos Purim. So first let's talk about Parashas Zachar, which is next Shabbos. The obligation to hear Parashas Zachar min HaTorah is for men, and it has to be read from a Sefer Torah in the presence of 10 men. But it's largely accepted minig these days for women to go as well. There are a number of opinions that hold women are obligated. So in any case, women do try very hard to go. If women can't make it, then they can't. There is actually still an inyan to read it from a chumash. It's just three psukim, the last three psukim in Parashas Kiseitse. So if you can't make it for whatever reason, that's also an option. You can read it from a chumash. And another option is that if you actually attend Shachris on Purim, they lain on Purim not the last three psukim in Parashas Kiseitse, but they lain the first time Amalek is mentioned in the Torah, which is in the end of Parashas B'Shalach, and you can also be Yaitzu with that, according to some Paiskim. So that's another option, if it's an option. So in any case, that's the way it works with Parashas Zachar, and it's ideal, again, to try to make it as best as you can. Next Thursday is going to be Tainus Esther, and it's a more lenient Tainus Esther. Even though Tainus Esther is actually the most lenient of all Tainasim as it is, it's even more lenient because it is pushed off. It's on Thursday instead of being the day right prior to Purim, which is Shabbos. As always, pregnant and nursing women do not have to fast, even if it's at the very beginning of a pregnancy. And if a person is sick, they certainly don't have to fast, and they shouldn't. But on Tainus Esther, and especially this year, it's even more lenient that even if you're not sick, but you're suffering, you're in pain, la'aleinu, for some reason, you also don't have to fast. So it's even more lenient than a typical fast, where it's only if you're sick, you break your fast. On this Tainus, even if you're just in pain for something, you also don't have to fast. Now, what's different this year is that obviously there's no Megillah at the night of Tainus Esther. Megillah is going to be Matzah Shabbos, so that makes life a little easier because you don't have to continue fasting until after you hear Megillah. So that's definitely easier. Now, this year being though that Megillah is Matzah Shabbos, the custom is not to make Havdalah until after you hear Megillah. So the men will go to shul and hear Megillah, and then they'll come back and make Havdalah. And that being the case, you should not eat. First of all, it's before Megillah, and second of all, it's before Havdalah. So there shouldn't be any eating done until you definitely hear Havdalah, or you yourself hear the Megillah. But the good news is, like I said, you haven't been fasting all day, so see to it that you eat by Shalosh Shudis, because you realize you won't be able to eat for a little while. So that's something to keep in mind. You could drink water. You're allowed to even drink water before Havdalah, actually. It's the one thing you're allowed to have before Havdalah. So if you're very thirsty, that is an option. You can drink water. Before Shachris, you're not supposed to eat before you hear Megillah either, but you could have a coffee. We're a little bit more lenient with Megillah before Shachris, so you can have a coffee, you can eat some small things, but you shouldn't actually have breakfast until after you hear Megillah in the morning. Both men and women are equally obligated to hear the entire Megillah from beginning to end. We're also obligated to be mechanech our children if they're old enough to listen without disturbing a Megillah. And if you think they may disturb others, obviously it's better to rather not bring them to that kriyas of Megillah and just bring them to, we have a different program that's appropriate for children. If someone comes a few minutes late for Megillah, that's a problem because you missed a couple of words, and basically there's no point hearing the rest if you've missed those words. If you're fast enough, you can try to catch up, and if you can catch up to the Baal Kairi, even though you read from a Chumash, that's fine. Not the easy thing to do. If you come in the middle of the brachas, again, if you have enough time, you can say those brachas quickly by yourself. Otherwise, don't even say the brachas, just listen to the Megillah and your Yaitza, even though you didn't hear the brachas. You could be Yaitza without hearing the brachas as well. And likewise, if you missed any word in the middle, for whatever reason, it's noise, if you had to step out, unless you can say it and catch up, It's a problem because you can't like wait till the end of the Megillah and then fill in the words or pasuk you missed, because that is it has to be said in order. So again, if you will have missed, then basically just go home and find someone else to read the Megillah for you, because there's no point hearing the rest of it unless you know you want to bang Haman, whatever, that's fine. But you're not yotze with that. You have to make sure you hear everything. But again, if you, especially in the middle of the Megillah when they're banging Haman, so there's a little easier to catch up, because if you're like a little around a Haman area, you can read while everybody's banging, and there's a little more time to catch up. And it's also obviously important to not doze, don't fall asleep in the middle of the Megillah. That doesn't count. Spacing out, it kind of depends how deep and out of space you got. So if you really like so deep and out of space that if someone calls your name you wouldn't answer, that's an issue. But if you're just like slightly spacing out, that's okay. During the day, when you hear the brachas on the Megillah, one of those brachas is Shehechiyanu, and you should have in mind that Shehechiyanu should cover the mitzvahs that we're going to do that day, which is Mishloach Manos, Matanas Lavyanim, giving to the poor, and lastly the Sudas Purim. So that's something to keep in mind. The bracha, you'll notice in the siddur after Kriyas HaMegillah, which is Harabas Rivenu, is only said b'tzibur of men. Otherwise, that bracha is not said. Let's move on to Matanas Lavyanim. So the mitzvah of Matanas Lavyanim is to give a monetary gift to two poor people. That's Avyanim, plural. Now, there's no clear minimum amount, but generally it's accepted you need to give enough money that they should be able to purchase a minimal su'uda for themselves, an elementary su'uda. So it's about $5 per ani. So that would mean each person needs to give $10 for Matanas Lavyanim, five to each ani. You can give it to Yad Yehuda, and they'll disperse it properly, that half of it goes to one ani and another half goes to another ani. Men and women are obligated in this mitzvah, and it doesn't seem like children are obligated because they don't really have money, they don't have jurisdiction over their money. So you can involve them in the mitzvah, which is ideal, like you can give them money to give to tzedakah, but they don't have their own personal obligation. But a husband and a wife both do have to give individually. Meiser money can't be used for Matanas Lavyanim, which means the bare minimum obligation has to be, you have to pay from other money. So the $10 that you're giving, you have, or $20, whatever it is, that needs to be given not from Meiser. Then, if you want to add to Matanas Lavyanim, that's tzedakah, and that you can use, that's fine to use Meiser money for. The concept is you're not supposed to use Meiser money for something that you have another independent obligation for. And the mitzvah can be done through any of the various organizations that represent poor people, and you can give the money before Purim, and it gets distributed on Purim, though that all works. You can give it to organizations in Eretz Yisrael that distribute it on Purim on your behalf. They see to it that the time zones match up. So all those options work, and obviously, the more tzedakah a person gives, the better it is for everybody. Next mitzvah is Mishloach Manos. Now, the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos is to give two portions of food, the plural is manos, but to one person. So that's the minimal obligation. You just need to give two portions of food, one gift, to one person. Now, what kind of portions does it mean? Different portions. So it's become customary to give different kinds of foods, like they should be significantly different. The idea is we say, well, if you give two pieces of cake, what makes it two portions? Maybe it's just one gift of cake. So it doesn't seem like that was a minig back in Europe. The way my mother says it, she says that they just gave two pieces of cake. So it seems like they just considered any two pieces is already two portions. But today, largely, we try to give more elaborate Mishloach Manos anyway, so we see to it that there should be two distinct things. They don't have to be two brachas, that's a misconception. It just has to be two things that are different. If you're going to give a salad and a salad dressing, that even though they're different, but it's really one big thing because it's eaten together, so that wouldn't really count. I don't know, you can start getting into the weeds with croutons and with this and that, whatever. Send something else. So make sure there's two quite distinct things. There's also no minimum amount specified to qualify as a portion, so it can be small, but it should be something respectable. So one shouldn't give a jelly bean and an M&M. or anything like that. That's something we used to do in yeshiva. So that's not a respectable portion. So it should be something more bakavadig, and that's what you could be the mitzvah with. And ideally, it's really supposed to be something you would use in the meal. I mean, it could be dessert too, but it should be something that would technically be used for the meal. It's a nice thing to try to make one really bakavadig and mishloach manis. You can give that to a rebbe or whoever. This way, you know, you're doing the mitzvah at least with one, and a mohudr dig away, and both husband and wife should do that, because each one has their own individual obligation of mishloach manis. Some people say water shouldn't be used, so water wouldn't count as one of the portions according to that. And also, whatever you give has to be ready to eat, so a tea bag and coffee wouldn't count, because it still needs to be cooked. Bag of beans, you know, obviously not. So that's it has to be something that you can eat right away, whatever it is that you are giving. Though both a man and a woman are obligated, it's not like you have to write on it, "This is from me," and your husband has to write on, "This is from me." If you give two, and one is for you, one is for your husband, that's fine. It doesn't have to be clearly defined which one's for which. With this mitzvah, we are mechanech our children. They wouldn't give us a choice anyway, so they all do mishloach manis, and obviously they should be. You should be mechanachim that way. Mishloach manis should not be sent to someone who's an avelus, which if it's directed towards the person who is an avelus, so if the person is married, it should be directed towards their wife or husband, whichever one is an avelus. It's not appropriate for a woman to send to a man, so it should be a family to a family, and then you can get around that problem. If there's a single person who is an avelus, then you can't send to them. If someone doesn't know the halacha, the avel can accept it. It doesn't have to turn it away. But the person, it's a hanhaga from our perspective, not to give to an avel. An avel himself or herself does need to give mishloach manis, so they can give. Men should only send to men. Women should only send to women. But if it's a family to a family, that's okay. Most common thing that keeps on coming up with mishloach manis is hafrashas challah. That comes up always with mishloach manis. Basically, the question is that, being that you're planning on dividing up all the little rolls that you're making or cookies among many different people, there's a concept called a manas l'chalik, that if you're planning on dividing it up, it invalidates the shear. It's as if you didn't make enough. But the accepted approach is that, being that you have no obligation to really give it to so many people, so it's not considered like you have to divide it up, so therefore you would be mafresh challah in that cake. But in that case, I'm sorry, but it does have to be a sufficient amount, so it has to be 5 pounds, and if you're making many different batches of mishloach manis, but it adds up eventually to that amount, you should put them all together. If they're in bags, open up the bags, cover it with a towel, and then you could take one and be mafresh, use that for hafrashas challah. If you're buying something like a glass dish or a glass jar, for mishloach manis, those should be tivled before use. So keep that in mind. It could be a big job sometimes. Sudas Purim needs to begin before Shkia, but then it can continue in the night. And you do say Al HaNisim by Berachas HaMazon. If you forget, you don't go back. Likewise, by davening, if you forget, you don't go back. Okay, Frel Chaporim Fred, with that.